Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details. Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 361. Well, hopefully everybody had a good Valentine's Day. Colby got me things and I didn't get him anything, so I'm terrible.
I don't think you ever get him anything.
I don't. But to be fair, though, I did get him some stuff recently just because.
Yeah.
So we'll count that.
Oh, okay.
Did I tell them about the picture that he wanted? It was like a deer leaping a fence in Cades Cove that's around like Pigeon Forge and
Gatlinburg,
Tennessee. It's like this like beautiful scenic thing you drive through with like all the wildlife and all. And it was like this deer buck jumping over it. And he was like, God, that would be such a great, like, I'd love to have that picture. And so I like found the guy in the Facebook group, reached out to him and got him that. So we'll call that his Valentine's. But he got me flowers sent to work and chocolate.
Probably the cheap kind, so you would like them all?
Well, he got like Russell Stover, so that's expensive kind to me. He didn't get me like the cheap kind that I really, really like.
Uh-huh.
No, there's some of these that he has to eat because it's like pecan chocolate things.
Mm.
But Donna got me a coffee cup a while back that had English Bulldogs on it. And then when she was recently at, I don't know, one of the like at home. Yeah. One of those home places. She saw another one and she was like, well, do you want it for your mom? And I was like, yes, get it because I'll give it to her for Valentine's Day. And Colby was off that day. So he went over to her house and she wasn't there. She was at her little exercise class. And so he like went in, put it in, took her garbage can in, put her like she had some dog food outside that needed to be brought in. And she was like so confused when she pulled up because she was thinking, I need to get my trash can. And she was like, somebody's been here. But she sent Colby and me a picture. She was like, I'm drinking hot chocolate out of my English Bulldog mug with my English Bulldog because Butch was sitting in her lap.
Aww.
And it was so cute. But I was like, okay, Minnie Pearl, take the tag off. She was like, I took one of them off. I didn't see there was two.
Oh, my God.
Also, yes, thank you for grabbing a card, too.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Donna, for getting my mom's Valentine's gift. I think she literally almost cried. She sounded like she was about to cry.
Aw. Yeah, I was like, do you want another one? And she was like, no. I was like, what about for your mom? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just not thoughtful. Like sometimes I am, but sometimes I just don't think of it.
Yeah.
Follow up from the baseball shenanigans from last week. Well, this, like the food was outside. They had like burgers, hot dogs. Like it was way more chill. Super fun. Like drinks, all the things.
Burgers, hot dogs.
They had these massive brownies.
Brownies? Like, that is my heaven.
Yeah.
And guys in baseball pants?
They're so cute. Well, y'all, I had so much fun. I have a couple of things to tell y'all. You can see, like, if you go to my Facebook page or my Instagram, there's some pictures and stuff I posted. And I did post a video because they had five different stations. Like, one was the weight room, where you got to talk to their strength and conditioning coach. Oh, and they had a thing with one, like the third base coach, where he taught you like how to read the calls, like when they're like, you know how when they're doing like the clap and snap,
yeah,
and touch their chin and
yeah,
and you're like, what are they doing? Well, they taught you how to read the calls, not theirs. They were secretive about what theirs are, but they were like, here are the different systems, and then like they showed you how to read them because it's all about like. This one system he taught us It's called an open and close thing. So they open with the chin and they close it with the chin. And then however many taps they do from chin to chin is what the call is. So like if they tap their chin, tap their shoulder, and then tap their chin, that's number one. So number one may mean bunt or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then they were like, okay, who wants to try? So I was like, okay. No, actually, he volunteered me, the coach, because we have a mutual friend that used to be a baseball player there. Mm. That's like one of my close friends that his wife is. And so I was like, hey, you know, you're friends with blah, blah, blah. You know, I work with her kind of thing. And so
name dropped.
I did. I was so annoying. But he volunteered me to go first. And I got it right.
Oh, girl.
I was so proud of myself. My sister went with me. She was like, wait, how the hell did you know that?
That's freaking awesome.
But there was a chart. I just had to count how many, like he tapped his chin, had to count how many tapped his chin again. Then I just look at the chart and I'm like, run.
That reminds me of the TikTok where it's like,
run. Yeah. Another one was like their locker room where you got to like take pictures from. Oh, and then
she does not finish a fucking sentence.
I don't. And you know what? That is my pet peeve, but I do it. Anyway, the group that put it on, they gave everybody a baseball with a Sharpie so you could like get all the players to sign it. And on my way home, I called Colby to be like, hey, I'm on my way home. Here's all the things. And I literally think I did not stop talking for the 20-minute drive home. And I was telling him about the baseball thing. And he was like, oh, that's so cool. You know, I talked to him more and I was like, we need to get one of those little cases so we can put it in there. And he was like, I've already ordered it. I was like, oh, God, you're the best. So that's sitting on the desk. Anyway.
Okay, now go back to the story.
Okay, so we...
The stations.
Yeah. Okay, so we went from the strength and conditioning one to the locker room, where you get to like take pictures with them and get them to sign all the baseballs, all the things. And we got to see like their trophies because they've won conference the last 2 years, you know, stuff like that. Then we went out on the field. So freaking fun. My sister had to ground she didn't have to. Everybody got to volunteer. She did like a ground ball and threw it to them. And these baseball players, the Southern Miss baseball players, are truly like top-notch dudes. Like, they are just good people. And so they are in it. They're excited. They're like, man, that was such a good throw. You know, they're just good people.
They didn't say that about your throw though, right?
Well, I didn't throw because I knew that if I squatted down to get that ball, I would have peed my pants.
Well, not that part, the other part.
Well, hold your horses.
Oh.
So then the next one was they were throwing a ball and you could bat it. Well, I'm a lefty when I bat. So I, of course, roasted the guy throwing me the balls because they were all low and inside, because he was throwing them from the side of like more for a right hander, it felt like, you know, so he kind of had to shimmy. He kind of had to shimmy himself over a little bit to throw it to me. And
I just love that it felt like he was doing this.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because he wasn't one of the pitchers either. It's like a outfielder, you know, just because they're underhanding it too. And so I was like, that one was on you. That was really bad. You know, like I'm roasting this kid that's an elite athlete, but it's fine. And then we went to the bullpen. This next sentence is just so gross, but because it makes me feel gross. But I knew a couple of the pitchers. So I feel like I'm name dropping. That's what I mean by gross. Like it feels ick to be like, I knew a couple of them.
Well, you've already said about before.
Yeah. Well, that's why I feel gross. But just in my line of work, you work with athletes, you know, so I knew a couple of the guys. So in the bullpen, they let you pitch the ball and they were radaring it to see how fast you threw it. Let me tell y'all how fast I threw this ball. It was so fast that the radar gun didn't even read it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that technique you had?
Oh, it was horrible, y'all.
I was going to say spot on.
The video, I cut it off because the guy that was doing the radar, the player, like I knew him too. And so like I, of course, was roasting him being like, I need you to point the gun. Like, this is how fast I'm throwing it.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how many times I threw it. And I got closer. It never, ever even read a thing. And then they're like, aim at his face. And I was like, okay. And then I almost threw it over the blocker thing that was protecting him.
They were like,
wait, not really.
Yeah, not.
And then the last one I threw it, it registered at 32. And I was like, yes. And I turned around and one of the pitchers that I freaking knew threw it. And his is the one that registered.
Oh my God.
I got so excited. I was like, yes. And I was like, wait, that was you.
I was so excited for you. I was like, wait, I didn't know this.
Yeah, no. But the girl that we ran into at our Galentine's thing, she did really good. She threw it, and the highest she got was 37. I was
shit.
Like, so I think that it didn't register under 30 miles an hour is the problem, because it was like 30, 31, 32, you know.
Yeah.
So your girl sucks at throwing now. I'm like, man, you don't use it, you lose it. That's for sure.
Mm.
But it was so much
Never
fun.
Had it.
Well, I did when I was younger. After college is when I lost it.
Yeah.
You want to tell them about your Galentine's thing we went to?
Mine?
Yeah, it was your idea.
It's a spa called Rebellious Rose. So if you live in Purvis or anywhere close, go see them. They're amazing. But we got there too late and I was like, oh, I'm going to get my shoulders rubbed. No, that person had left. So there was that. I was like, it's okay. But I had to pee. And so Carrie came in there after me and she was like, I have something to tell you. And I was like, you're getting Botox? Because it was a Botox thing. So like, you know how we are. If she gets it, I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And so I was like, oh, I really want Botox. I can't afford it though. And then like, so she came in here like, I got something to tell you. And I was like, oh, you're getting it? Like, I will scrounge.
Yeah.
Like, what do I have to do? And she was like, the massage therapist left. I was like, no, it's okay. But we ended up getting our eyebrows tinted. And I didn't know that it would make a lot of difference, but it really does.
Yeah, it really does. I did panic that mine was too dark at first, like panicked bad. I did wash my face when I went home because I was panicking so bad. But the next day, like, everything was fine.
Yeah, I liked them.
I think it's just because I don't wear makeup every day. So with makeup, that dark looked great. But my no makeup face, it was too much.
I still think they looked good.
No, they do now.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'm entitled to my opinion, and oh, I thought God. They looked good.
This bitch, because I said that to her at dinner. And I said my feelings.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, same thing. I felt they looked good.
Wait, that reminded me of something else. Oh, but we did work on your shoulders later.
Oh, my gosh, because the next day, my shoulders, I couldn't dance, I couldn't do anything, and Carrie's over there having a great old time at lunch. Why was she dancing? Because obnoxious music. But I was like, I can't do anything. Anyway, Carrie did needle my neck and my shoulder. No, my shoulders.
Yeah, not really your neck.
Yeah, my shoulder area. And she worked me hard with a spoon. But it was so much better.
Y'all know how she has gotten so much better about needles. If you've been a longtime listener, y'all remember when she almost died in the hospital? And like literally had a blood clot that could have killed her at any point. We didn't know that's what it was, but they needed to do the CAT scan to figure that out. And she almost left because they needed to do an IV on her. She let me needle her. So she's gotten better, but she was still a little bit of a wuss.
Those all were like, ooh, but there was one.
Yeah, no, you had one muscle that really did like grab, like it needed it. We were definitely where we needed to be.
Like it was arm wrestling that needle, okay?
But she was better. I did use a spoon on her to scrape, but if that's what you're like, she used a spoon on you. What are you talking about?
It felt so amazing.
Like you've ever seen like a fascia blaster or whatever, where you use like metal tools or something like that. I did that, but she didn't have one. So I used a spoon.
Yeah, it was fucking amazing. But that's my ailment for 2025 so far. So now I need to do a budget of how can I get a massage like every like 3 months?
And yeah.
Just like a 30-minute massage. I don't need like all the things. I just need someone to do my shoulders because I hold so much stress there for no reason.
I told Colby that I almost got a lip flip. I totally went back to an old story, but because they were doing like Botox and lip flips and stuff. And he was like, no.
I think you look good with it.
Oh, what'd he say? He said, I like you natural, except for your dyed hair. And I was like, so you don't like my dyed eyebrows?
So you won't ever get a lip flip?
No, I don't think so. Because I'm scared of what it will look like. You know what I mean? Like, I'm scared it's going to be, that girl did it, got her lips done. I don't want that.
I don't want a lip flip. I want injections.
This girl with the biggest lips side of the Mississippi.
They're not. Just let me live my life. I want plastic surgery.
You
okay?
Do you, boo. I right now, and then I swear we're going to get stories, I just want laser for my redness.
Well, the lady at the Galentine's, she has talked me into a chemical peel, But I got to wait till they goes on sale, you know, like then I can do it because that's expensive. Okay, if y'all have made it this far, we actually do have some stories to tell y'all. So sit back, buckle up, whatever you need to do. All right, we are going to Pennsylvania. It's a small little community about 30 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, and it's in the Mount Pleasant Township of Westmoreland County, and the name of this little community is Kecksburg.
There's a lot of burgs in Pennsylvania.
It really is. I don't know why I said it really is. Should be there really are.
Yeah.
Whatever. But with all of that, you know, the small community, a township, that all means rural. It's known for farming, and it's the kind of place where people's lives were as slow as I walk. Just everything moved at a leisurely pace. And at the time that this story took place, there were only 250 residents. But on the night of December 9th, 1965, everything changed. Thousands of people across different states and parts of Canada witnessed a glowing fireball moving through the sky. So you know what kind of story this is.
Alien.
So the object was described as having a bright metallic appearance, and it had smoke that trailed after it. It seemed to be emitting sparks, and it was like an orange kind of glow. Multiple report said that the object seemed to change course when it was going. So it's like, and like veered off. And that's when it crashed near Kecksburg. And let me tell y'all, it set off a chain reaction of confusion and some tinfoil hat moments. So residents of Kecksburg claimed that they saw what I just told you, but they also said it was acorn shaped. And they said that it got kind of partially buried in the woods. Now, some people said it was as big as a car, specifically a Volkswagen Beetle. But if you think acorn-shaped Volkswagen Beetle, I mean, it is kind of, the same. And one person who got kind of close to it said that there were some strange inscriptions on it, like in hieroglyphic kind of stuff. But that's not all, because some eyewitnesses also reported feeling very strange energy in the air. And also around this time that the thing was going, the radio and the television signals went haywire. Like I mentioned, lots of eyewitnesses to this, brothers Rob and Ray Landy, they were riding their bicycles when they saw this object fly over them. Ray was quoted as saying, "We were riding up the road and we just happened to look up into the sky and we saw this thing coming over the tops of the trees. It just glided right across the sky, like across the horizon of the trees. We were just in awe as we watched it. And then it disappeared and we ran," which, yeah. Well, also, why'd you run? You're on a bike.
True. Wait. Yes.
But maybe he meant we ran away. Like, yeah. Just like we left.
Like they pedaled away, but they, yeah, what you just said.
And his brother Rob was like, "We know what an airplane looks like and we know what a helicopter looks like." And that didn't look like either of them. And when they like saw it, they were like, "Oh, fuck, it's going to hit the ground." And then they skedaddled out of there, either on their bikes or running. I don't know. Now, another boy, Randy Overly, he saw it as well. He wasn't with them. He was playing by a creek about 3 miles away. He said he heard a deep hissing sound. And when he like looked around him, I want to be like, did you think it was a snake or something? I was like, what the fuck? But I don't think so. I think it was more like a hissing steam kind of sound. But he looked up and he saw an object coming at him. And he saw it from a pretty good distance away, but he was basically me and he just stood there like with his mouth open and was like, "What?" And it flew right over him. And he said it wasn't going super fast, but it wasn't slow either. but he just kind of like stood there and watched it glide over him. Then there was a man named Bill Bulbush, and he claimed that the object turned in the sky. He said that it looked like it was controlled. It wasn't just something that like the wind like swept it up and it turned that way. It looked like someone had like a remote control and was like, and I oop. So he saw it right before it crashed into the woods. So he was like my mama, and he did not turn and run. He was like, well, I'm going to go see what happened. So he drove out to investigate, and that's when he saw the acorn-shaped object. He said it was about 10 foot long, and he also said it was smoldering in the woods, which I can only think about Tangled and Flynn Rider, because he's like talking about his smolder. Do you know that part?
Mm-hmm.
I like really love Tangled.
It was actually a really good movie.
That was my first 3D movie.
I do not like 3D movies.
I didn't really like go in there knowing that it was going to be that. But then they were like, here's the glasses. And I was like, okay. But the lanterns were like floating.
I bet that was cool.
My friends were like, Donna, chill out. But I was like, I've never seen it. Now, old Bill, you know, he was checking it out, but then he heard some people coming and he skedaddled too, because he was like, well, I don't know what's going down, but I don't want to be a part of it if they think I had something to do with it. Kind of like, what are you doing here then? You know? Mm-hmm. So he was just like, let me be Homer Simpson in the bush. Like, I'm going back. Get it? Because his name was Bulbush.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the ones who might have been the closest to it were Navon and Nadine Kalp, who were playing in their yard when it flew overhead, and it then crashed into the woods in a ravine about a half a mile from their home. Now, Frances, their mom, heard on the radio this emergency broadcast going on, and she's like, oh, fuck, that's what I just saw. So she, whatever Carrie says, badoop, badoop, badooped. And I don't know why, but how do you do it?
I don't know what you're trying to do.
Oh, boop, boop, boop.
Is that
boop,
a phone
boop,
call?
Yeah.
Dee-doo, boop, boop, boop.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. She had her two fingers were just doing weird things. Badoop, badoop, badoop.
Yeah, I don't know what you did.
Sounded like she was trying to call the aliens or something. I don't know. But she did call in to say, hey, it looked like a small airplane or something. Like, we kind of saw it. It looked like it might have been on fire, but it's close to my house. Well, no sooner than she hung up. So it wasn't like she alerted them, really, because there were some people that came around. She received a call from a man who said he was in the U.S. Navy. And he was like, look, we need you to be on the lookout. Make sure no one goes around. And if you see anything weird, you call me back. So then while like this is happening, the operator badoop, badoop, badoops in and was like, excuse me, the police are on their way. They are arriving now. So, you know, Frances is like, what in the fuck is this party line going on? You know what I mean? And sure enough, some state troopers and two unidentified men were there. Frances told them, you know, everything that she had just told the operator and this U.S. navalman. Again, what's super intriguing is that, like, while she's on the phone with this random person that called her back and was like, hey, I'm in the Navy, you know,
mm-hmm.
and was talking about this, the U.S. military peeps got to the scene, like, within minutes. So it's like, wait, what? What's going on? And before there could be too much of a crowd, it was sectioned off. And witnesses saw that there was a flatbed truck that was like, that went up close to it. And they saw the large acorn shaped thing being put in that flatbed.
Now, to be fair, if they really did think that it was a plane crash, the military would be all over that too.
Before the police got there?
I mean, pretty fucking quick.
I don't know. It just seemed weird.
Yeah, the getting there before the police is weird, but I'm just saying, if there was a plane crash, they would be all over that.
Yeah, but, okay, here's the thing. I feel like, because this would be the same as, like, when those like single helicopters crash or whatever. And it takes them a little bit. Like, I mean, they dispatch, but they're just like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not like it's a whole like airplane. So then some teams were called in to actually locate this crash site. There is a volunteer firefighter, Jim Mays, and he was like, okay, I got you. I know these woods like the back of my hand or the palm. Who knows?
Dumb as shit.
And he led some state troopers to the ravine. And when he looked down there, he said that he saw several blue flashing lights coming from the area. And so he was quoted as saying, "We went up to this road and came to the brow of the hill and stopped. Down to the right, in the hollow, there were blue flashing lights. It wasn't searchers down in the woods. There's no flashlights or anything. It was real bright blue. Real bright. Like an electric welder."
There's no shot that he said that sentence and said...
hollow?
Yes. He would have 1,000% called it the holler.
You know... you're probably right. But at that point, they had closed all the roads off. And when they did that, they're like, all right, go. Like, you got to go back. And he's like, what the fuck? I literally just got here, showed y'all where to come. And now, like, I can't see anything. So he was like, huh. Like, if he was a dog, his heckles were up. Is that the thing?
I have no idea what you just said.
Like, you know, when a dog is like, on alert, their heckles are raised.
Isn't like that their ears? I have no idea. I've never heard that.
No, the hair, before. Like when their heckles.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
I could have made that up, y'all.
No, I believe you. I'm just saying I've never heard it before.
You believe me?
I do. I don't believe this story, but I do believe you.
Okay, so some more volunteers came, and it was 30 volunteer firefighters. So, like, should I just say that there's, like, some weird object?
Yeah, you are the weird object.
It was like really hot and it's right here.
In my undercarriage.
God, okay. Really?
Now don't play like that's not some shit you'd say.
You're not wrong. So at this time, they were on the other side of the place trying to look for it around this ravine. Well, James Romansky, a volunteer firefighter, like I said, I mean, I can't help it, but I love firefighters, okay? They got the big hoses and all.
A minute ago, you were loving the baseball players. You just are boy crazy right now.
I am, but baseball players are top tier, okay? Their booties are. Anyway, James is the one who saw it up close and personal and was like, there's some fucking writing on this that's not something I can read. And he said that it was half buried in the ground, about 6 or 7 foot around, and it was about 12 foot long. He said it didn't look anything like a plane, really, because there were no propellers or motors or wings anywhere. He said there were markings like stars, shapes, and figures, and he doesn't know. And he said, to this day, I've never seen anything like it. So again, when he got too close, they were like, you have to leave, like, go. Like, we found it, cool, now skedaddle. That must be my new word. So the military men, also fans of them, because, you know, can you keep that, what's it called, the dog tags around your neck? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. Anyway, but the military had, like, taken over this farmhouse that was owned by Lillian Hayes, and that was going to be their, like, headquarters. And I know this is like, what the fuck? But it reminded me of The Patriot with Mel Gibson, which I know Mel Gibson is me, but that was a good damn movie. It had Heath Ledger in it too. And what was his name? I can't think of the other guy's name, but he was brother. Anyway, so good. But like back in the day, the military could just like come in and take over your fucking house and use it for their hospital, use it for... like their quarters or whatever. And that's what I feel like they did here. It was like, man, we're going to need to come in, use your shit.
I'm pretty sure they still can.
I think so too. But I'm, you know what I mean? It's just like, damn, what do you do? I mean, I know what I would do. I'd be like, anyone need some lemonade? me having no lemonade. Now, while they were headquartered at Lillian Hayes's house, like I said, they used it as their like central station, like central comm place. They made several phone calls and like she couldn't be around them, but she like heard like, hey, yeah, it's in the kitchen, you know, whatever. Cause you know, that's where the phone always is. But when she got her bill, cause you know, she was like, I want to see who they called. No phone calls from that night were on her bill. So that's very
sketchy. Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's smart of her though, to be like, I want to know who they called and I want to see. But they had her number, okay?
Quite literally. Like literally and figuratively.
Now, one more thing about Lillian Hayes. She had a son named John, and he said he saw what he believes to have been that object, that metal object, leaving in the truck by like a military convoy. A teenager named Bill Weaver, he was trying to see what was going on, and he ended up seeing four men carrying a large box to the ravine, but it wasn't big enough to fit that object. So they're like, wait, what are you getting? Like, what are you going down there to get and bring back in this like big box, but not big enough for like the 12-foot long object? And like, they weren't going to be just carrying it. You know what I mean? But it could have been like a black box. I don't fucking know. I don't really know how that works. But it could have been an alien. You never know.
You think they were carrying an alien out?
Not really. That one is a joke. But like, they were carrying something. Like, they were like, hey, we need to get something. No one can see what we're getting from this. And some men were like on it, had a big black box or had a big box and went down, did something, and then got it out. But not the object. Could have been an alien. It's kind of like they were in their own world, and then they're like, hey, you can't be here, because they see him on the side, you know, and all of that. So he was ushered away. After James and John, who was Lillian Hayes's son, saw this happen, no one knows where it went afterward. Now, there were several articles written about this. It was in Sky and Telescope, the Journal of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada.
Wow.
Whew. And there were a lot of people who came forward and said, yeah, even like later, the military came around and was asking questions if we saw anything, if we like, did we take anything? Did something fall in our yard? You know, that kind of thing. And this man named John Murphy was like, yeah, my wife was able to take some pictures. And they were like, and give it to me. Like, you can't have this.
Wow. Now that I do believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward to 2005. This is still going on. NASA changed its opinion on the object being like part of a meteor or anything like that to saying, okay, y'all, this is what happened. Because, you know, like if you don't have a resolution, people are going to never believe you that it wasn't anything. And so they said it was part of a fallen Soviet satellite called Cosmos 96. However, this man, Stan Gordon, who is a UFO researcher and all the things, he was like, all right, let me look at this. But it was determined that that whole satellite wasn't close to this site, and like, they're just fucking blaming it on something that sounds legit. Then they were like, hey, sorry, y'all want some investigations and shit. So they did like a FOIA request, which is Freedom of Information Act. And they were like, we know you want this, but we don't have any idea where the information went on that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Have no clue where that went.
Convenient.
Then some other people came out and was like, okay, look, we know it's sketch, but it really seems like it was a meteor. And they're like, okay, so we're back on this now. And then again, my man Stan comes in and he's like, a meteor doesn't just change that course like how it did. Like, it ain't going to happen. And yeah, like, went into, you know, all the like black holeness of it, you know, like knowing all the things. He's like, so I wasn't born yesterday. Like, it wasn't a meteor. So again, give me the fucking paper. And they're like, again, we don't know where it is. So to this day, no one knows because the records are not there. They have been misplaced or lost.
I wonder if now they would miraculously be found because you know how the government's like, oh, there actually are aliens.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if now you really could get them.
I don't know. But I will say what you can get is a picture with the space acorn. That's what they call it. It's a replica.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? I thought it was MIA. Yeah,
no, it's a replica of what, you know, like people, the locals said they saw. And they have an annual UFO festival, which is put on by the volunteer fire department.
You need to go.
I know, right? I'm like, these firemen are like, we saw what we saw and we're going to celebrate. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really need to go and you might just find you a firefighter.
You know, they do build some fake spacecrafts and they dress in costumes. And it's basically Mardi Gras, but for UFO peeps. And this is known as like Pennsylvania's Roswell kind of thing. Because people said it's like so many eyewitnesses, so many people were close to this, the sketchiness of everything. And then they're being like, we lost the papers.
Yeah. I mean, like, come up with a different lie.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, just going flip-flopping back and forth to all the things. And it's like, you got so many people who know about space. Not me, but so many people.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, like, you could tell me it was a meteor and I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, cool. But not these people. So, if you want to learn more about it, there are some documentaries on it. It was on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries and Ancient Aliens. But that is a Kecksburg UFO incident.
I mean, really and truly, it's not out of the realm of possibility, especially with all the cover-up. But there could be some cover-up, like maybe it was a Russian thing and they were like, oh yeah, it's the Russian blah, blah, blah. And it really wasn't because that information is so readily available that they were like, let's say it's this one, but like really it was this other one. But true. We don't know, we don't want people to know because what year was it?
It was like 1965 when this
happened. So like kind of close to the Cold War shit.
Sure.
When was the Cold War? This says 1945 to 1991. So I don't know shit about history, but I'm just saying if it was close to the Cold War, then it would make sense as to why they were trying to keep whatever Russian whatever hush hush.
Right. And also, like, this really wasn't about aliens. Like, I was joking about, like, what did they pull out? We don't know. Hell, it could have been an actual person. We don't know because it could have been some secret mission. That's why the military knew right. what was going on.
Because, and knew right where to go.
Yeah. So, you know, it's still a UFO because we don't know. But why you got to be so sketchy about it? But also watching shows and it's like, I don't know how if that's really how it is in the like military and politics and like all the things, but it's like the shit y'all know, the close calls y'all have to know about and all of that. I don't want to know. Like, keep me ignorant.
We were talking about this literally, though, at dinner tonight, just like how people in power and all, like they hide so much stuff. And it's like, we don't know what we don't know because they don't want to lose their power.
Mm-hmm.
And if we know about fucking aliens running around and all this stuff, like, it changes everything.
Right.
They just tried to placate us before by being like, all right, look, we'll tell y'all about a little bit of them because the world was coming to an end. And so they were like, well, we may as well tell y'all now.
Oh my God, they did the TikTok of it all. Like, now that this is like coming to an end, there's something I need to be honest about.
Yes, but like for real though.
And I was like, oh, we're still here.
Yeah, they really thought with COVID and all, they were like, oh, this shit's going down. Like, we should probably tell them about the aliens, don't you think? And then it didn't come to an end. And then they're like, don't forget about the ocean, y'all. Let's release Tiger King again. Tiger King 2. Okay, I'm actually really excited about my story tonight. And well, I don't know why I always say tonight, because who knows when y'all are listening. I changed it about 85 times. I could just not settle on anything. Like, nothing felt like this is what I want to do. And then it just hit me. Terri Schiavo.
Who's is that?
What? You don't remember the Terry Schiavo case from 2005?
No.
Oh, girl, sit back and relax.
Wait, is this a woman?
Yes.
Was she a mom?
No. Okay, so I'm doing my story different than usual. And this story has always stuck with me. Like, I remember this happening in real time. And let me just say, looking back on this story 20 years later with a more adult perspective, one, but two, just understanding the world in a different way because, well, the world is very different. I'm just like, man, I was way wrong back in the day. Like, I had this story all kind of misunderstood.
Kind of like how you misunderstand me.
Well, that's because you just don't say it right. But this is the story of Terry Schiavo. Okay, so there were two things that I've like, well, really three, that I really used for this story. One was on the Mayo Clinic, and it was an article written by C. Christopher Hook and Paul S. Mueller. There was also a podcast called Psych Legal Pop, which was really cool. And the other one was from NBC News, and it was from an interview with Matt Lauer. Okay, Terry Schiavo was born Teresa Marie Schindler in 1963. Her mom is Mary and her dad is Robert, and she was born in Pennsylvania. She's the oldest of three. She had a younger sister and a younger brother.
Okay, that's wild that she was born in Pennsylvania and my case took place in Pennsylvania.
I know. Well, technically this story takes place in Florida, but that's where she was born. So she went to college, and that's where she met Michael Schiavo, who she started dating in 1982, and then they got married in 84, and then in 86, they moved to Florida.
That's literally what I planned for my life, is that I would meet someone in college,
mm-hmm.
get married, have kids, and like that was by 27.
Yeah.
Ask me how that's going.
Well, considering you're about to be 40 and don't want kids now.
And have no potential prospects.
Now, on the Wikipedia page, it said that Michael and Terry moved to Florida following her parents. But in the podcast I was telling y'all about, which they did this story based off of a documentary, which, of course, the name just left me, and I didn't get a chance to watch it. But they said that the Schiavos moved to Florida first, and then her parents followed them, which if that's the case, I think that's pretty weird because she had younger siblings that would have been like still in high school or, you know, and all of that. And so like to uproot them is kind of weird to follow your oldest child as she settles with her husband. Like that to me is a very weird dynamic. So I don't know if that's for sure true. But early morning, like way early, like 5 a.m. on February 25th of 1990, Michael and Terry had gone to bed. She kissed him goodnight, went to sleep. And like I said, at 5 a.m. that morning, Michael hears like a thud and kind of a bang. So he is like, wait, where's Terry? What's going on? And when he gets up, he sees Terry lying on the ground. And he, of course, panics and is like, oh my God, like what's wrong? What's wrong? And calls 911. And when paramedics get there, she's not breathing and she does not have a pulse. They do all the CPR and have to intubate her and take her to the hospital. Now, what we learn is that Terry has had cardiac arrest. And basically, she went into cardiac arrest because her potassium levels were too low. Later, they ended up saying this was because of an eating disorder. At first, it was said it was anorexia, and then I think they kind of realized maybe it was more bulimia than anorexia, but not that that really matters. But now they were able to save Terry. She was eventually able to come off of the ventilator and breathe on her own. Her heart was beating. She was not able to swallow on her own. And so they ate a PEG tube, which is the feeding tube in the stomach. Now, while she was like awake, she was not there. What they call it is a persistent vegetative state. So she's not conscious. She's essentially brain dead, but she's able to breathe on her own. Her heart is beating. She can't eat or drink, but she can, like I said, breathe on her own and all of that. But she doesn't know that you're talking to her. She doesn't respond to stimuli, like if you like touch her, that kind of thing. That's what I'm like, sound, all of that. She's not going to respond to that. And she will have like reflexes. So I think she like would grunt a little bit, make noises and stuff. And so it was kind of hard because it was like, is this her or is this just reflexes? Now, Terry was in the hospital for a while, and then she was eventually transferred to a rehab where she got physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy.
Wait, you said she was brain dead.
The scans showed no brain activity, yes. You can do therapy in ICU. You can do therapy really at any level. But, you know, the rehab for her would be trying to get her to sit in a wheelchair, which, I mean, she did sit in a wheelchair, but it, from the pictures that I saw, it looked to be more like a reclining back wheelchair that was holding her up, like she wasn't holding herself up, and teaching the family, because the goal is to take her home. Michael, he did everything that he could to be able to take care of her. And the skilled nursing would be like, and the rehab facility would be teaching him how to do that.
Yeah.
Teaching him how to manage the PEG tube, which is the feeding tube in the stomach. Therapy, teaching him how to do like Hoyer lifts, roll her, get her dressed, all the things to be able to take care of her throughout the day, because she is going to need 24-hour around the clock caregiving. Now, Michael did his very best to bring her home, but with it being around the clock and needing as much help as she needed, Michael had actually moved in with the parents to try to give her this care. After about 3 weeks at home, they had to bring her back to the facility because they just couldn't do it.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, because it is a 24-hour-a-day job. Now, Michael was in it. Because you got to remember, they're like 26 years old. Like, this happened when Terry was very young. And they had been married, I think, like, maybe they'd been together like 7 or 8 years at this point. And they were trying to start a family. Like, they were, you know, just this young couple in love, all the things. And so he was really trying to turn things around for Terry. And so he ended up taking Terry to California to get this experimental thalamic stimulator implanted to try to help her brain activity. And unfortunately, it didn't work. And so they went back to Florida to another rehab center. And again, like, there's so many different types of rehab centers. So, I mean, it's not necessarily like a rehab where she's getting like 3 hours of therapy a day. It could be something like a long-term acute center where she's able to get more advanced care without being in the hospital. Because I don't really also know exactly when she came off the ventilator either. Like, because you can go to rehab while you're still on the ventilator. So, you know, I don't know when that was actually ever, she was able to get off of that. So after they had gone to Florida, they had tried to take her home. They had done literally all the things. In 1994, so 4 years later, Michael decided that it was time to make Terry do not resuscitate. So meaning that if she goes into cardiac arrest again, they don't try to bring her back. And around this time is when Michael's relationship with his in-laws really starts to go south, because things were really good between them. Like, I mean, you know, you got to remember, this is years and years in the making of this story. And, you know, he was 26. Terry, by all intents and purposes, was brain dead. Like, she was not coming back. I don't think her parents were fully accepting that, but they also kind of knew. And so they were even encouraging Michael to, like, pursue other relationships and that sort of thing. Because while he loved Terry, Terry wasn't coming back.
That's so hard. And
yes.
Just how do you?
I don't know.
Yeah. How do you do that?
I don't know. I don't either. Michael actually had two different malpractice suits, because remember how I told you that they were trying to get pregnant? He sued because of like the infertility treatments that they were getting. I think it was her gynecologist and primary that he sued, because he was like, y'all should have caught this eating disorder and this low potassium. So he was awarded $250,000 and $300,000 for loss of consortium. I don't know if that's how you say it, but basically that's like loss of a partner. I had to Google that because I didn't know what the fuck that was. can't even say it. And there was also a $750,000 trust put in Terry's name, like for her care. And that was controlled by a bank. Michael didn't have any control of that. Meanwhile, this is like years in the making. So that money's probably long fucking gone.
All of the shit that they have like tried with her and just in general, healthcare is expensive, but like she seems that she needs like the extra care.
Well, I mean, probably just flying her out to California alone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this story that we didn't know when this kind of all took place that we found out later. Because in 2006 is when Michael does this interview with Matt Lauer and he kind of spills the beans on some stuff. And all this is we didn't really know about. So Michael said that one day Terry's dad comes up to him and is like, basically, how much money am I going to get? And
from the money?
Yes. And Michael's like, I'm giving it all to Terry. And that the father-in-law was like, well, how much is she going to give me? And we just,
that is so fucking cringe.
I know. And Michael was like, she's not giving you anything. This money's in a trust with a guardian for her care. And that seems to kind of be where the downfall was, because the father-in-law was like, well, I'm going to get an attorney then. And then it really went south when on July 29th of 1993, the Schindlers petitioned the court to get Michael removed as Terry's guardian. And it's like, okay, why? Why all of a sudden are you not okay with him being the guardian, because you've been fine with it this whole time? And I mean, the timing is a little sus. The courts were like, there's literally no reason for him to not be the guardian. So no, we're dismissing this.
I feel like once you get married, that's your family then.
Girl, yes. This story is so like riddled with the whole parents thinking that they still are like in charge of their child that's a grown-ass adult that is married. And it's like, Michael is her family now. Like, Colby is my family. Like, my mom doesn't get to make decisions about me because I'm married to Colby now. So if I'm in this state like Terry, it's going to fall to Colby.
Right.
So the court does end up at some point, and to be honest, I'm not really sure when or why, but having a guardian ad litem, basically, not that I'm an attorney, I just play one on the podcast, but like y'all know, you see this a lot with kids in foster care, where they'll have a guardian ad litem, and basically it's like a third party person with no particular interest in the matter.
She's the man?
Yes, and it's someone to just, that's outside of the situation, that can act on Terry's behalf, because really, everybody's got relationships and money and all the things that just muddies the water. And so this is a person that is truly only for Terry. Now, this person also was kind of looking in on everything and making sure that Terry's well taken care of. You know, the money's being spent the way it's supposed to, all the things. And they found that Michael is really, as they called it, a nursing home administrator's nightmare, because he's so, as they said, meticulous about Terry's care. And it really did result in Terry getting amazing care, because he was there and making sure that things were done right and making sure that they're turning her and making sure she's not getting skin breakdown and all the things. And so, i.e., it found that he was a great caretaker for her. Now, in 1998, Michael petitions the court in order to have Terry's PEG tube removed. Now, the PEG tube is what is giving her essentially food. It's the only thing keeping her alive, because she can't do it on her own. So the PEG tube is sustaining her life. Now, Robert and Mary, her parents, are like, abso-fucking-lutely not. They say that Terry would want to be kept alive. So they end up getting another guardian ad litem to look into this. And this guardian ad litem is like, look, Terry is in a persistent vegetative state. All of the physicians say that she has had no change. She has no chance of improving. And the guardian ad litem is like, the only evidence to show that Terry, what her wishes are, is hearsay. But they did think that the feeding tube should be removed.
I'm sorry, but like, if there's no brain activity and all the doctors are like, there's absolutely no way.
I know. But, you know, there's somebody always has a story of so-and-so was in a coma for, you know, so many years and they woke up. And it's but she's not in a coma. Yeah. No, I know. Like, she's not in a coma. Like, she's not going to just wake up. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
In the year 2000, there was a trial that was specifically to figure out what Terry's wishes were. Because, again, Michael is saying she would not want to live like this. And her family's saying, yes, she would.
But, okay, also, here's the thing. Even if when she was younger, she had said, like, never do this, for the longest time now, like, whatever you said, 8 years or mm-hmm. so, they've been together. And so they could have had these conversations or whatever, because people change. Like you said, I wanted kids. Don't want kids now.
Well, and that was kind of the thing of who knows her better. And it's like her husband, like he does. He knows her, like you said, now. He knows what she wants. The family, from what I understand, didn't even know she had an eating disorder. And now that's an extreme example of, because people hide things, but like, you didn't know everything about her.
Right. I wonder if they knew that they were trying
to get pregnant. That I don't know. But it's like, I mean, to me, it just feels like the family is imposing what they want for her versus what she wants. So anyway, Michael has his brother, his sister-in-law. They all had depositions saying that in different situations, like at family funerals, that kind of thing, that Terry had said, look, I don't ever want to live like that. Like, if I'm ever this ill, I don't want to live like that. Now, Terry was Catholic. And at this trial, they had a guy named Father Gerard Murphy, who was from the diocese in St. Petersburg, to like come testify, because they're also like, you know, this also becomes a thing of like right to life and all the things. And we know that the Catholic Church is going to lean towards life, like they're, you know, anti-abortion, all the things. And so they were like, I think they were thinking, okay, we're going to bring in the Catholic Church. But basically, the priest was like, well, technically, Terry hadn't had communion or confession in 2 years. So she's not technically a practicing Catholic.
That's rude as fuck.
Right. But also, he was like, there's actually nothing in the Bible that says anything about this. So kind of basically, he had nothing. Like, he wasn't going to say that, based on her religion, that the tube couldn't be pulled. So Judge Greer, who kind of comes up in the story a lot, but Judge Greer said, you can remove the PEG tube. Now, her parents do all the appeals, and because of the appeals, Judge Greer has to do a stay on his order, and he puts it for like 30 days past like when they would be able to exhaust all of their appeals. It went to the Second District Court of Appeals, and they were like, no, Judge Greer was right. Like, you can pull the feeding tube. So then they took it to an appellate court, and they were like, Judge Greer should recuse himself. And all these requests were denied, but they did do another stay on the PEG removal because, again, giving them the chance to go through all their due process. They even tried to take this to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court was like, no, we're not taking this case. And the PEG tube was removed on April 24th of 2001. Now, 2 days after the feeding tube was removed, the Schindlers filed an emergency, like motion, appeal, blah, 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 because they said they had new evidence that Michael had basically perjured himself and had been lying. So one of Michael's ex-girlfriends called a radio show and said that basically everything that Michael said on the stand wasn't true, that Terry never said that, and that Michael wanted the money, and so he said things like it would be easier if she died and all of this.
Okay. Already know at the called the radio station.
Right. So not an attorney, not like the family you called. Like all I picture is her like calling Howard Stern. You know, I mean, I don't know why it's Howard Stern in my head, but it's like, why? Why is that who you went to?
Yeah. Also, you can't say that is like that he perjured himself when it's hearsay, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
And maybe they didn't say perjured. I could have just said that word.
Well, I was just wondering because it's like, wow, if they didn't have any proof, you can't, you know what I mean?
Well, he did have a deposition on that, and you're sworn in for that. So if he was lying in that, it would be
with them, with her. Like if he had said, I want all the
money. Yeah.
Like that's hearsay. So
yeah, but if you argue that, then you could even argue that the people who testified saying these were Terry's wishes was hearsay and should be. So I don't know what the definition of hearsay is. I think hearsay would be like if you were testifying that I told you Colby said something. I think that would be hearsay. But if you heard Colby say something, it wouldn't be hearsay.
But I don't fucking know. Because you can't prove it.
I'm telling you, I don't know if that's the definition. Somebody, it's probably an attorney listening to this and screaming at me going, that's not the definition of hearsay.
Well, I also want to be like, okay, well, did you put her in court to have her testify?
Well, they tried. But Judge Greer dismisses it. So then the Schindlers file a civil suit against Michael, and a circuit court tells them to put the peg tube back in.
Okay, for laymen like me, this is a big deal.
It's not like surgery. It's a procedure. It's really not that big. I mean, like it's a lot on her because then they're having to, you know, if they can't do it at that facility, they're going to have to take her to the hospital to do it. You know, all the thing, depending on where they can do it. But it's like done in, not in like an operating room.
Okay.
So it would be hard on her body because it is, you know, like I said, moving her from wherever to wherever to have it done. And it's a thing, but it's like, taking them out isn't, like, they could just do that at her bedside.
Okay.
But you do have to do it under, like, a guide of stuff to make sure that it's in the right spot. This went through appeals and appeals and appeals, and then they're like, okay, it can be removed, and then it was delayed, and then I'm not even going to make y'all go through all of this, like, insert and removal. I think it was taken out, like, 2 or 3 times and had to be put back in. Eventually, in October of 2001, in the Second District Court of Appeals, they decided to get 5 physicians to look at Terry and her condition to see, is she going to actually improve? Michael got to pick 2, the Schindlers got to pick 2, and the court picked 1. Of course, the 2 for the Schindlers were like, she can get better. And the other 3 were like, she's not going to get better. Now, this whole time, by the way, I want you to keep in mind that her parents had acknowledged, like in court and everything, had acknowledged that she was in a persistent vegetative state. And during this last trial with the physicians and all of that, they were like, no, actually, we take that back. We don't think she's in a vegetative state anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they try again to get Michael off as the guardian because they're like, he has been neglecting and abusing her. And they're like, you know what? We don't actually know whether or not he's the one that caused this injury to begin with.
But yet you let him live with you. You wanted him to date other people.
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
Now, because of this, because of all the testimony by these 5 doctors, yada, 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 Judge Greer again is like, the peg tube can be removed. Now, this is starting to pick up some steam in the media. I mean, like, this is starting to become pretty big because the Advocacy Center for Persons with Disability tries to file a federal lawsuit to stop this because they say that taking out a feeding tube is abuse and neglect. And it gets to the part where they have people like just someone in a wheelchair being like, if you're going to stop her feeding tube, like, what are you going to do to me to, like, you know, you're just going to kill her because she's disabled? And it's like, no, that's not what this is.
That's not even apples and oranges.
No,
there.
No, that's like an apple and a fucking turnip. Like those right? 2 things are not the same. Like you having a physical or intellectual disability is not the same as someone with no brain activity.
Right. And she's on life-sustaining measures.
Correct. Well, and that's the thing, too, is that people, you know, when you think about someone on a feeding tube, people don't think of that as the same as like a ventilator. You know, when someone like has the same brain function or lack thereof as Terry, and they're on a ventilator and they can't breathe on their own, people are okay with taking them off that life support. People aren't okay with taking someone off of the life support of a feeding tube because a lot's not understood about it. People think that they're going to literally starve to death in a way that is awful for them. They think they're going to be in pain and, you know, just have this horrible end. And it's not like that. If you look at anybody who is in the active dying process, they are not eating or drinking. Their body doesn't need it. Their body is functioning differently than someone that's not actively dying. And so it's like, you can't compare the two. And then kind of back to the disabilities thing where it's like, well, if you're gonna, like, air quotes, kill her because of her disability, then what would you do to me? That's like, to me, that's the same argument that's like, oh, it's a slippery slope, like with gay marriage. How they're like, if you're letting people marry the same sex, then what happens? What, people are going to be marrying dogs next? They're going to be marrying a house next? They're going to be right. Married. And it's like, okay, first of all, no. Ain't nobody, that is not going to happen. That is not the same thing. That is like, abso-fucking-lutely not. Someone marrying someone that they love that happens to be the same like sex as them assigned at birth does not mean that some goddamn horse.
Right.
Like, that's the dumbest shit to me.
And I'm pretty sure before gay marriage was legal, people probably tried to do that anyway.
Facts. I mean, there was that one woman that married a ghost, like a pirate ghost, yeah. And then they got divorced. Okay, so the family did all the things to try to, like, get the courts to see. So there was this guy that was assigned to be her guardian ad litem. So number three, his name was Jay Wolfson. So he would go at varying times of the day to go see Terry. So that way he sees her in the morning, he sees her in the afternoon, he sees her late at night, he sees her in all these different times so that he could see, like, okay, what is she really like? Because then the family couldn't say, well, you know what? In the afternoon, she's really tired. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, he saw her at 6 a.m. I'm making that number up. You know, he saw her at 10 p.m. He saw her at 3 p.m. He saw her at all these different times.
Yeah.
So that he could truly see what she was like. Because now the family would come in and say, you know, of course, talk to her. Hey, I love you, blah, blah, blah. If you can hear me, blink your eyes, squeeze my hand. Blink your eyes, Terry. You know, that kind of thing. And he found that looking through hours of videotape that there was absolutely no interaction that was repetitive, intentional, that could be reproduced, all the things. Because I think it said like 100 times the family would say, blink your eyes, and she did it 5. And it's like, it's just a correlation of the time. It's not doing it because they said blink your eyes. She just, in a reflex, blinked her eyes. Like, I remember when I was in therapy school that one of my teachers was saying that what'll happen a lot after a stroke, when somebody yawns, like, their arm will bend, because mine does it when I yawn really big, and the family will be like, oh my God, their arm's moving. And it's like, no, that's a reflex. Like, they yawned, and so their arms move. It had nothing to do. There was no volitional movement. So that's what I mean by it was just a reflex of, my eyes are dry, I'm blinking my eyes, because that's a reflex, you know, because her mom said, Terry, blink once for yes, twice for no. And basically, same thing, persistent vegetative state, and agreed that nothing was going to come from this. Now, this is also when it starts getting really big, too. And at the time, Jeb Bush was the governor for Florida. He tries to make something called Terry's Law that they approved in like a day to be like, you can't pull somebody's feeding tube. Well, shortly after that, like really quick, the courts were like, Terry's Law is unconstitutional because, see, we have this thing called separation of powers, and the governor has no control over this. Like, this is a court's thing, not a governor thing. So, like, sorry about you. And it seems like Jeb Bush really tried to dig his heels in on this, like, tried to file for, like, rehearing all of this, and the federal Supreme Court was like, nah, bitch, you stay out of this. But this is also when the media was really ramping up, and Terry's family was getting a lot of like the pro-life movement involved. And for this to get compared to abortion in this pro-life movement really just pissed me the fuck off, because it's not the same thing. I don't care where you stand on abortion. Someone who's brain dead and you're taking away a life support is not the same as an abortion. Both are your right, and both should be legal because they are both your rights. But like, just to, because this is what it was doing. It was pulling on the heartstrings. Like, that's what they were trying to do. Because again, these groups don't give a fuck about what Terry's life is going to be like if you continue this feeding tube. They don't give a fuck that she has a fracture in her back that can cause sepsis and kill her. They don't give a fuck about that. They don't give a fuck about how her family's going to pay for her care. They don't give a shit about any of that. Just like people who are anti-abortions, that all they care about is you having the baby. They don't care about if you can afford daycare. They don't care about if you can afford your school lunches for your kids, because they're damn sure not going to give you free lunches for them. They're not going to give you health care for your kids, because they're going to say that you're using all these social systems that shouldn't be there, like Medicaid and all that. They don't give a fuck. They just want you to have the baby. They just want Terry to live. They don't give a fuck about anybody's quality of life. Okay, stepping off that soapbox.
Girl, stay on it, because you were on a roll, and I'm just like, yes, yes, yeah, agreed.
And look, does everybody listen to this podcast support abortions? Probably not. But my point is that it can't stop there. If that's what you believe, then you also have to believe in all these other things to support them after they've been born. Believe what you want to believe, but don't stop there. Okay, that's all. Back to the story. The long of the short of it is, because there was way more things that went into this as far as like attorneys and, you know, going to court and blah, 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 blah. Eventually, they rejected all the things, and they were able to one last time remove Terry's feeding tube. And at the age of 41, on March 31st of 2005, Terry Schiavo passed away.
Wait. Yes. So this happened in the 90s?
1990 is when she went into cardiac arrest.
Holy fuck.
Mm-hmm. She was 26. She died at 41.
That's a whole life.
Yes. So I do want to say they did do an autopsy, and the autopsy absolutely supported that Terry did have so much brain damage that it was irreversible, and that there was absolutely no hope that she would have ever, air quotes, on woken up. Like, there was no hope of rehabilitation is what they said. Her brain weighed less than half of what it should for someone her age. And they found that the occipital cortex was also severely damaged, and that she was blind. So all of that stuff where the family was saying, like, she was watching me walk in, she was doing that, she wasn't. She couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
And again, my heart breaks for her parents. This is their child. Like, I'm not trying to be callous towards the family, because you're hopeful. Like, you want her to see you. You hope that she is looking at you. You hope that she's in there. You want her to wake up. Of course you do. Like, that's normal. But at some point, it's okay to let go. Mm-hmm. And the point of this is, it was Michael's decision, because he's her immediate family.
Yeah. Also, I feel like he tried a lot of shit. It wasn't like he just said this the day after the accident and was like, oh, okay, gotta go. Like, there were years there that he was there daily and all the things. And like, finally, it's like, you know what? Like you said, this is done then.
We've tried everything.
Yeah.
He tried absolutely everything. And like, you know, again, I think if this had been any other like life-saving thing, like dialysis, a ventilator, anything like that, and you wanted to stop it, it would be okay. People would not have any problem with it. But people feel like you're starving them in a way that is torture. And it's not. Like, that article from Mayo Clinic was showing that that people who, when you take their PEG tubes out and stuff, they actually die very peacefully. And it's not torture.
Looking back on my dad, like, he stopped eating before we even knew that it, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it was like, okay, well, he can only, like, I'm forcing him to drink Ensure because he's not eating anything.
Right.
You know, and even Lori, when she went into her non-responsive state, it was a few days mm-hmm. that she didn't do anything.
Yeah. And if you force it, you can actually make it harder on them because then, you know, if it goes into their lungs and you're giving them pneumonia and all of that, and it's like, your bodies know what to do. Like, our bodies know how to die. Like, it's a natural thing, and we are so scared of it that, I don't know, like, hospice has a special place in my heart because I've worked with people who have been on hospice. My grandmother, hell, y'all know the story of my dad. Like, it's a peaceful process, and if you look at it, it's also predictable in, like, the stages that people go through. Some people go through it faster, some people go through it slower, but, like, we know how people die. Like, we've been doing it since the beginning of time. Like, and dying without a PEG tube, it's not cruel. It's not inhumane. It's natural.
Because if that's the only thing that's yes. sustaining them, like, nothing else is really...
Correct. And, like, again, if this had been 200 years ago, she would have just passed away. Like, there wouldn't have been this. Like, she wouldn't, like, this wouldn't even be a thing. Like, she would have just passed away naturally and without all of this back and forth because there weren't ways to feed people that way, you know? Like, you would just let their bodies go because that's what the body's designed to do. I don't know. I just, like, tell your family what you want and make sure that there is somebody that will advocate for you. Get an advance directive, whatever you got to do so that this doesn't keep happening. Because I don't know why, but this sort, like, I remember this happening. Like, this one just affected me so much. And I remember back then being like, why doesn't Michael just, like, I hate to say it like this, but give her to her parents if he wants to move on or whatever, like, go ahead. But he had moved on in relationships. Like, he had this long-term girlfriend who he ended up marrying. And she, even in that interview with Matt Lauer, was like, Terry came first. He loved her and she came first. And we did everything we could to protect her. And it's like, I didn't understand it then. One, because I was like 20 when this happened. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't understand anything about life. But also now I'm like, no, he was doing what Terry wanted. He was advocating for her and protecting her because he loved her. It's right. not about just give her to her parents, blah, blah, blah. Because no, he loved her and he was trying to carry out her wishes.
Yeah, that's so hard. Like, I don't know how I don't remember this.
I think if you see her picture, you'll remember her.
I just think, like, my sister. So, okay, my dad is the one who brought up cremation to our family. He wanted to be cremated. And so when Lori was diagnosed with cancer and everything, she told us all that she wanted to be cremated. And in the end, my dad was like, she shouldn't be cremated. Like, it's because of me. And, you know, she shouldn't be cremated. I broke down thinking, did she feel the burn from the, like, just stupid shit. Just because it's so hard. Like you said, we don't understand. We're mm-hmm. scared of death. We're scared of all of this. But then when my nanny, my grandmother, when she was in the nursing home and all of that, she would always be like, don't cremate me. And I'm like, I'm not. Like, you don't want to be cremated. We're not. Like, why would we do that at all? Like, wow.
Right.
You know, like, what a shitty thing that you're going to think I'm going to cremate you.
Well, it's because she treated you shitty all your life. So she just assumed.
Yeah. But it's like, no, you want to be buried. Okay.
Well, you know, my mom has even said, because I have said I want to be cremated. And so for the record, y'all hear it. And also for the record, I do not want that kind of life-sustaining stuff. So if I am brain dead, let me go.
Me too.
But, you know, I've always said I wanted to be cremated, which now with Colby, I know that that would be what happened. But my mom would say, like, well, I better go before you then because I'm not cremating you. And I'm like, that's what I want. It's like against what she believes. She thinks that you should were you always taught in church? Like, they always made it seem like your bodies would literally rise up from the graves and you'd all go to heaven one day. And so I think that's what she believes. And so it's like, don't get cremated because like you may need your body later, which whatever. But I'm like, okay, yes, you may believe that, but that's not what I want.
Right.
So I would tell my sisters, like, if I die, y'all better make sure I get cremated.
Yeah. I don't know what I believed before my dad brought that up, you know, but he's been saying it for forever.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just, when that happened, when Lori died, it was like, oh, this is so much more economical and easier to just because it's so like, you don't want to have to deal with all of that, you know? And if they have it already fixed up and ready to go and you do all your things, hey, whatever you want, I'm going to do. But it was so much easier just to go that route. I was like, oh, me too. This is what I want.
Right.
Like, I don't want anyone to have that burden of going through and planning all the things. And
right.
No. So, yeah, I don't know what I wanted before that. I guess I just wanted to be buried, but had no plan.
Nor did you probably ever think of it.
Right.
Until you've truly watched someone go through like that dying process, it is so very scary and misunderstood. And you're like, oh my God, are they hurting? Are they all the things? And it's like, you don't know what you've never experienced. And so it's like, trust the experts when they're telling you like, this isn't going to be painful for her. Like this, you know, there's going to be comfort measures, all the things.
Also, we have to wrap this up because the sky's talking and it's mad.
Yeah, that we've been through two tornado warnings. We had to get in the hall today at work and it just big time thundered. So we're going to wrap this up real quick. Did you agree with me in this story?
Absolutely.
I told you you would. Y'all let us know. Did y'all hear that thunder?
You agreed with me.
Donna. I'm the one that remembered this fucking story.
Okay, well, you...
was wrong at the beginning.
Yeah.
See, this is personal growth. But y'all let us know what y'all think. Even if you disagree with us, you're wrong. No, I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding. I really am kidding. For real, if you disagree with us, let us know what you think. Let us know if you think that Donna's aliens are real because the sky is still falling outside. And remember...
creep it real and don't get scared.